Hey there. My name's Tim. Welcome to The Table, the podcast edition. The Table's a community that exists to make room to explore what we believe. What you're about to hear is an edited version of something that we call the Talky Bit. We're sharing it with the hope that it can be a positive catalyst and encouragement to you in your own explorations. In our experience, exploring what we believe can sometimes be hard work, and we don't think anybody should have to do that alone. We're able to offer this because of the generous support of donors both within and beyond a local community. If you want to contribute to keeping it going, you can find information about how to do that at thetablewinnipeg.com. Thanks for dropping by. Just a quick note about this particular podcast. The person who shared the talky bit, Misty Blake Knox, was talking about yogic teachings. And along the way, we did some practice together. In the course of turning that live experience into a podcast, I've edited for brevity, so there's places where we stopped and were silent or had time for reflection or time when we were actually doing the physical parts of the practice. And in those places on the podcast, if you want to participate fully, you just have to pause for a bit while you actually do the thing that Misty's leading us in doing and then resume listening. Either way, the teachings are insightful and accessible and may resonate for some of you as they have for Misty in her own journey of exploring what she believes. Peace.
Hello. For those of you who are at home, sorry for your luck, but we handed out little notebooks to everybody who was here and pens. If anybody here didn't get one, I saw Corrine handing them out. Thank you so much. But if you didn't, they're there. Please help yourself. But you might, partway through this, we're going to do a little bit of a journaling exercise. So you might want to grab something to write on and with, whatever floats your boat. Or maybe you just want to think about it, and that works too. So I'm Misty Blake Knox. I've been around for a bit, I guess. I feel like time stopped during the pandemic. So, and I am, so I just recently started taking yoga teacher training. And the reason I did that was because I found that in taking yoga classes, there's a lot missing. You learn a lot about the physical postures, but not about the rest of yoga. And the other reason I did that, I think, was because since I moved on from my previous church, evangelical life, that kind of thing, I was really missing a spiritual practice, but those old practices didn't resonate anymore. So I wanted to find something that resonated. I want to say everything I'm doing here is all about choice. I took trauma-informed yoga, and one of those pillars is about choice. So everything I have here is an invitation, not a demand or challenge. And so there's lots of options and lots of choice. I also have a land and lineage acknowledgement plan because that is part of being yoga or living yoga is non-harm. And so acknowledging both that I am a mostly white person invited onto a land that did not belong to me is of huge importance. The other part of that, though, and it's more relevant to yoga, is yoga is also highly colonized, and working to change that. So my dad's side of the family is Irish and Métis, and then my mom's side of the family is from England. So like we're like the OG colonizers, right? And also, my dad's Irish side of the family actually went to India during, when they were colonizing India. So when I started to think about that, I'm like, oh, more colonization. But it's it's interesting to think about that. So I want to acknowledge that, and I want to declare my intention to honor, particularly in this context, the roots of yoga, and to talk about those things. I also want to talk about the fact that I am really grateful for my teachers. I'm grateful for the people who have taught me not only the movement-based practice, but also what yoga is really about. And that's why I'm here today. Yoga is believed to have existed for around 5,000 years. The first written mention is around 1500 before Christ existed. Yoga, yuj, actually means unity. And when I say unity, I don't think they're really talking about the, like, get along with people, be all the same. They're talking about unity self with spirit, unity with each other, just being together. And so the first known actually written text kind of explaining yoga was from Patanjali. And don't really know exactly when that was written. It was either 200 years BC to 200 years AD. So who knows, but still super old. And it's not really linked to any religion. I think, you know, you tend to link it to Buddhism because there's a lot of parallels there. So you can practice yoga and be a Buddhist or a Christian or a whatever. It is not a religion, but it is a spiritual practice. And in the mid-1800s, as I was saying, Britain started to rule India, and yoga was essentially banned, which is part of, you know, a theme of banning things because we don't understand them or they're not our idea. Because as I go through Patanjali's eight limbs, I look at, you know, Christian teachings and see a lot of alignment and don't really see the problem. So I'm sure other people could point out the problem, what the problem was. But I think it's mostly yoga is really powerful as well. And I as I was graduating, we're doing our graduating course, although I haven't actually finished, but I finished the together part. You know, I came up with this saying called gentle ferocity, which means, like, without being violent, without being a jerk, but there's some power of bringing change. And I noticed when I lived that way and I thought that way, I was able to address certain things in my life without being violent or super aggressive. Like, I was able to truth tell in a way that actually worked and brought about change. And that was really cool. So that's the history of yoga. There's a much longer history. But you don't want to listen to all of that. So I want to talk about, here's the meat of what I want to talk about, Patanjali's eight limbs. So there are eight limbs of yoga, and the movement part is one of those limbs. It's the third limb. I don't know why they call them limbs. I don't know if it was like the octopus has eight limbs. I don't know. But so there's eight limbs. There's the yamas, which are the outer codes. There's the niyamas, which are the inner codes. Asana is the movement that we're all kind of familiar with. Pranayama, breathing. Pratyahara is focus and withdrawal of senses. Dharana is mindfulness and concentration. Dhyana is meditation. And Samadhi is bliss and unity. That might have been the scary one for the Christians. So I'm going to go through these in a little more detail here. So the yamas, the outer codes, there's actually five parts. So outer codes, ahimsa, kindness, non-stealing. This is where the justice comes in. Satya, truth, deep listening. So when you're talking to a friend at a deep level, that's satya. When you're having conversations about with a therapist, that's satya. We did a lot of satya actually in our yoga training. Every session we did like a circle of how are things going, what are you thinking about. It was just wonderful. Asteya is non-stealing / generosity. Brahmachara is care of others / energy management. So the interesting thing about some of these teachings as well is you can just like, okay, brahmachara, care of others. It's not just care of others. To care for others, we have to manage our own energy or decide how we're going to use that energy. A paragrapha, this is the one people grab onto when they think of yoga or Buddhist teachings. It's impermanence / letting go. It's like a subset of one of eight limbs, but it is important. It's, you know, what this too shall pass. And also, not necessarily for me, I find a lot of assistance in not holding on to a certain result with another person, or, you know, I was going to do this. Oh, I didn't do this. I'm terrible. There's so much of just letting it go. Like Tim says, Tim Penner, it will be okay. Niyamas are the inner codes. And it's kind of interesting to me because the yamas almost feel like there's a part of an inner code in those as well to think about. But the niyamas are inner codes. Saucha is cleanliness. So it's not necessarily or just about the cleanliness of your space. Although that can be... I actually found that thinking about saucha in terms of the cleanliness of things around me made it into more of a spiritual practice to say, do the dishes. Because it's a practice. You're doing this for a benefit rather than I have to do the dishes or I have to clean the house or I'm terrible because the house is a mess. It's like, no, I'm going to do this because it will make me and my dog or others around me, you know, more comfortable in my home and just, it just feels better. One of the ways that I have a bit of a ritual around this is after I do a physical yoga practice at home, I make sure to put away my yoga stuff. And it just feels like a nice practice and a way to ground and finish at the end. Santosha is joy, so that's, I'm down with that practice. Tapas, desire, discipline, ritual. This is really hard for me, to be honest, because as a neurodivergent personality, discipline is like not a thing. But the way I implement it is to look at it as a problem, like how can I bring consistency to my practice? And also, having lots of room for the consistency, right? It's like, well, I'm going to do something every day. It's not going to be the same thing. It might not be the same thing. Because the thing with, for me, struggling with executive function is that the same organization system will work for like maybe a month and then I have to find a new one. And so, yes, I have 27 journals and maybe more and they're not full and things like that. And, you know, even if I want to drink more water, I buy another water bottle. So what? It works for a while. Novelty helps. Svadhyaya, is self-study. We're actually going to do a little bit of that, and that's why I handed out the little notebooks. And that has been a really helpful practice for me of just spending a few minutes journaling in the morning. And my journal is like boring as heck, right? It could be like, this is what I feel would be helpful for me today. This is what I'm thinking about. There's nothing like... I mean, there are chunks in there where it's like something hits and it's deep and I read about that. I hope I don't have like a deep hurt to write about every day anyway, but it just helps me focus. Like, what will be the most helpful for me today and the most, the best use of my energy? I actually will give myself points for doing things, and then I add up the points and then buy something with the points. And some things need a lot of points, like going to the dentist or whatever. Yes, I pay myself to go to the dentist. Just things like that, that it just, it helps me. And Ishvara Pradhana is devotion. So devotion, I think it has some baggage to it for me. But my teacher explained it to me. If you think about like another human or a pet you really care about, devotion is that care of them and yourself. It's taking care. It's that extra care of, you know, like say with, I don't have a husband, so I have, or a kid. So I use my dog for every analogy. But it's like, you know, it's knowing that maybe he would like a little water on his food, or knowing that he's activated and helping him through that, helping him through his vet visits, things like that, right? It's another level of care that maybe not everybody in your life is going to, you know, that you're going to extend, because you don't have energy to be really attuned to everybody's like super detailed needs. But that's what, you know, that's how she explained devotion. And it was really, really helpful for me. So asanas, that's the movement. That is just a very small part of yoga. We will do some asana. And it is very helpful, but it's part of everything else. And a lot of the people I was working with through my course, they do very little asana based practice. A lot of it is, you know, meditation, breathing, that kind of thing. And asana when it works. And so that was very interesting to me. Pranayama is breathing, which I'm a fan of. intentional breathing, thinking about your breath, it's like your life force. Pratyahara, focus and withdrawal of senses. You know, you can do that, and you can kind of combine it with dharana, which is mindfulness and concentration, but depending. So this might be, you know, putting on those noise canceling headphones. For me too, lying under a weighted blanket is super helpful to kind of bring things down. Dhyana, which is spelled Dhyana, is meditation. And then samadhi is bliss and unity. Well, I don't know how much of that I've experienced, but I have seen pieces of it. And I look forward to telling you about it when I figure out what it looks like for me exactly. But definitely pieces, you know, pieces of it. Just this letting go of, like, everything you're thinking about and just feeling, like, this peace. And I don't think you're meant to walk around the world like that 24/7. We're meant to have a range of emotions. So that's kind of what happens. But boy, searching for that, I don't know if I even would search for it all the time. I think there's a place for it. So next, now it's your turn. So I handed out the little books, or you grab the little books and pens. And I have a few things to think about. One thing is, do not worry, I am not going to do a round robin and ask you what your answers were. And you have all the privacy you need. I have these questions I actually borrowed from another, well, stole, borrowed, learned. I learned from one of the teachers So here's the four questions. Normally I would split them up, but I forgot to make a slide. So how am I feeling? What do I need? How can I meet those needs? And how can I engage community to help me meet those needs? Nice thing about getting all of those questions together too is you'll have some time to, they kind of can blend together sometimes. So what am I feeling? What do I need? How can I meet those needs? How can I engage community to help me? I'm going to invite you into a pranayama slash breathing practice. My favorite one to think about, teach, is simply called three-part breathing, because we often don't think about where our breath goes, and so it's cool to think about. It's also really good to prompt. One thing breathing people will often say is, you know, inhaling and exhaling through your nose is like the best. I will say that I found that very difficult at times. I think it's trauma related. I think it can feel like you're not getting enough breath if you're not breathing through your mouth or not using your mouth. Also, you may not have access, like you may have a stuffed nose, you may have, you know, a deviated septum. You may not be able to get enough air through your nose to feel comfortable. So do what feels comfortable for you. And also, eventually you'll end up going at your own pace, because we all breathe at our own pace. What feels like a really long exhale for one person may feel like super short for another, or what feels like, you know, a decent exhale, you may be like, how can you exhale for that long? Like, that's, you know, whatever is comfortable. There's no prize for getting it right. There's just prizes for the test. I have pens and notebooks. No. So I'll invite you to sit in whatever way feels most comfortable for you. You might consider rooting both of your feet onto the ground, and either soften your gaze or close your eyes. Do whatever feels most comfortable for you. And just pay attention to your breath. And they always say pay attention to your breath without changing it, which is impossible, because as soon as you pay attention to your breath, you change it. Like, that's just the way it goes. But pay attention to your breath without necessarily needing to change it. And notice where that breath comes from. Where does the inhale come from? Where does the exhale come from? You know, I'm a little bit nervous because I'm teaching this class. I'm sitting in front of all of you. So, you know, it's mostly sitting in my chest and my throat, which isn't actually that helpful. So I'm going to think about first the first part. So I'm going to, and if this feels good for you, you can put your hand on your belly. A lot of people in yoga class too, they'll tie straps around their belly up here, you know, under your sternum and then on your chest. We're not going to do that because we don't have that many straps and it doesn't feel great. So just paying attention to your breath. See if on the inhale you can feel your belly expand. So when you inhale, your diaphragm expands. You inhale and your belly expands, and then you exhale and then your belly contracts. So inhaling, your belly gets larger, your diaphragm pushes, and exhale, it contracts. A couple more like that. And maybe if it feels good, you can put your hands on the side of your ribs, or some people put them on their back, and just feel when you inhale if you can feel that expand. So inhale, it first goes to your belly and then your ribs get expand a little bit. If it feels good, you can put your hands over the middle of your chest, which we call your heart space. And see when you breathe if you can feel the expansion there. It might be super subtle, and you might have to really think about it, or you might not feel it at all. So in through the belly, the ribs, up into your heart space, and then exhale, the heart space deflates, ribs come down, belly comes down. And now that we're working through all three parts, you might consider just taking two extra sips once you're at the end of your inhales. And if it feels comfortable, if your eyes are closed, just slowly open them. And if you're softening your gaze, you might want to look around, see what's happening in the room. Move your hands a little bit. Shake it out. Shake it out. So we're at the people call real yoga, the asana part. As I said in the blurb, we're not going to do anything too weird. All of the practice I have planned is based in your chair. These are great for those who maybe sit at a desk for a long time. You can do parts of this. You don't have to move out of your chair. I don't know, nobody bothers me at my office when I do it, and it really can just look like stretching. I have some cards here to remind me of what I had planned, and they're actually all standing, but I will adapt them. So again, everything's about choice. I'll try to give options. If it doesn't work for you, you know, you can just sit quietly with your feet on the floor and your hands ready to receive, or whatever else feels comfortable. I'm going to invite you to again soften your gaze, or maybe you want, well, it's hard to close your eyes because you're going to have to watch me, but soften your gaze and just take a couple breaths here again. And set the intention for your practice. What do you want out of this practice? It might just be a little stretch. You might want to learn something new. You might want to relax. But thinking about what you need from this practice. So I'm going to invite you to, take a comfortable seat. Plant your feet on the floor if that's available to you. And then reach up with your arms this way, and then focus your drishti, which is your gaze, towards the ceiling. And take a couple deep breaths. Then we're gonna come down slowly. And one more, up into the sky, focusing up. Maybe reaching your fingers as far as they can go up. Just getting that little stretch and movement. You might want to choose some movement here. So move your shoulders up and down. Whatever feels good. And then bringing your arms back down. We're going to reach up again. And we're going to put our hands in a little, you know, prayer-like stance. And then lean over to one side. And you want to try, and this one's called standing crescent. So if you think of it like a crescent move, you're going for a curve in the side of your body. And then you might move to the other side. And then sit wherever feels good. You know, you might want to stay there. You might want to move. Your arms might be tired, I get it. It is a long time to hold your arms up. And then if you're ready, you can bring your arms back down, shake them out. And then this one you might want to sit a little bit forward in your chair the next couple. And it's just a forward fold. So folding, thinking of your spine and whatever is comfortable. Some people find it more comfortable to widen their legs so they have more room. And you can bring it back up. And the thing about finding a chair practice or any practice is it's good to try and move the spine in all the ways, because that can be really refreshing for your body, for your nervous system. So I've tried to make sure I plan that you're kind of moving your spine a little, in whatever way works, right? And then the next one, some of you may have heard of cat-cow. So traditionally you do it on your hands and knees. We're not going to do that. Well, you can if you want. But you can do it in a chair. So this one, you definitely want to have some room between you and the back of the chair. And the first part is you're going to think of arching your back. And that's traditionally the inhale. So you inhale, bend your back, and exhale, move your arch your back. And do a few of those in whatever way feels good. I think cat-cow is literally my favorite. And pro tip, if you are yawning, that's actually your nervous system regulating. It's not necessarily that I'm boring you. It could be that too, but... And then it looks like most people are done with that one. So we're going to do a bit of a twist. So probably sit back on your chair with not too much room, but you can just grab the outside of your thigh and put your hand behind you. You could use the bottom of the chair or the arm of the chair. And you just want to twist and hold this and take a few breaths here. And then we'll twist the other way. And if you're ready, you can do one more each way. So we're gonna do a seated version. Some people call it like the 3-point. So when you're on your back and yeah. You'll understand. It's also a pigeon pose, but we're going to do this seated. So if you, whatever way you need to, if you grab your ankle and bring it on your knee, if that's available to you, you can adjust this partially by moving the other leg out so that your knee's not as high if this is too uncomfortable on your hips. And then you can also adjust it by bringing your leg a little closer to you. And you can also make this a little more, so whatever feels good to you, you can lean forward and then you'll feel that through that side of your glute, through your hips. This might be enough, this might be too much, whatever works for you. And don't forget to take some breaths here. And then you can slowly sit up, slowly let your leg fall. And then slowly bring your other leg up in whatever way works for you. And then again, this leg, for a lot of people, your opposite legs feel very different. So just figure out what feels good. A few deep breaths here. And then when you feel like you've had enough, bring your other foot down. And... So normally at the end of the practice, you would do savasana, so like they call it corpse pose, or relax and lie down. This probably isn't the context for that. I wanted to spend some time in a satya practice, so that's a sharing practice, because I would love to hear from the rest of you what this practice was like for you, you know, even without telling us necessarily what you wrote down. What was that like? You can tell us what you wrote down too, I know. But I'd love to hear what this was like for you. Was anything surprising to you, or was this just all new agey weird stuff? I'm okay with that too. I've embraced being weird. I am. So one of the things I learned in my yoga teacher training is that namaste actually doesn't mean the light in me sees the light in you. It's kind of like saying yo. It's like, hey. So I don't say that. I don't say it at all. But thank you for sharing your practice with me.
Thank you, Misty. Thank you.